While you're doing that, I'm going to see if this goes a bit higher. There we go. That'll do.
It's a bit rocky.
It's alright, so am I. Yeah, that's great. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
It's great to be with you. Last time I was here, I was playing the guitar and I wasn't preaching, and we had a guest. What's his name again? The gentleman who came and spoke.
David
came. And he spoke on the Great Banquet. You're going through this series, I think, on invitations. And I really enjoyed what he was saying. And if you remember that story that Jesus told, it was a story that was about how the servant was sent out to bring people, not just to talk to people or invite them. They were blind, they were lame, they were handicapped. Do you know, there was no way they would find their way. A blind person's not going to find his way into a banquet hall unless he's brought. A lame person, like the paralyzed man, needed somebody to bring him. And then, even then, this house was not full. The will of the master of that house was that my house will be full. That's what they said there. And so he sent them out again to compel them to come in. That word meant to convince them, to cajole them. Because many people, as we learn, you know, find it difficult, as Brian has said, to actually come through the doors of a church. It's an intimidating thing. And many people don't wonder whether it's possible for them to come to church these days. I often, when I was leading MCF, I used to go out onto the precinct outside our building and talk to people. And I remember distinctly talking to this lady one day, 40-year-old, and talking to her, 40, 50, something like that, talking to her about what we did and what was happening that day at the church and all the rest of it. And about what happened on Sunday. And she said, "Am I allowed to come to church?" And you don't even think about that as a Christian until somebody asks you the question. The lady off the estate, "Am I allowed to come?" And you have to convince people that it's okay if they're not wearing the right clothes, if they don't know which way where to put the fork and knife and all the rest of it, if they're not dressed like everyone else. Because all these people that were coming in from the streets and the alleyways, you know, they wouldn't have a change of clothes. They wouldn't know what it would like to do all the things. When do I stand up? When do I sit down? When do I pray? How do I pray? What do I do here? What's the Bible? Whereabouts is it? All those things that we take for granted that they know nothing about. You have to convince people in that invitation, you know, that actually it's okay. You bring them, you sit with them, you encourage them, you're there for them. This is all part of that. I'm taking it on a bit further. And speaking from Luke chapter 10, I don't know if this has come up at all in this in your series. If it has, sorry, this is what you're going to get again. This is what I felt I should bring. And it's Jesus sending out the 72. And I'll read this passage and then we'll have some ideas of this. Because the invitation isn't just something you send in the post, like we do. You know, there wasn't a post in those days. Or even a tract that you push through somebody's letterbox. Do you know what I mean? Say, well, there you are, I've given something out. The invitation is a personal invitation in Jesus' terms. It's given by somebody, and actually that person is then kind of involved in the bringing. This is actually Jesus, having told that story about the great banquet, this is Jesus putting into practice with his followers how we invite people into his great kingdom. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them out, this is Luke 10, sent them out two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field. Go, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. Do not take a purse or bag or sandals, and do not greet anyone on the road. When you enter a house, first say, 'Peace to this house.' And if a man of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. If not, it will return to you. Stay in that house, eating and drinking whatever they give you, for the worker deserves his wages. Do not move around from house to house. And when you enter a town and are welcomed, eat what is set before you. Heal the sick who are there, and tell them, 'The kingdom of God is near you.' But when you enter a town and are not welcomed, go into its streets and say, 'Even the dust of your town that sticks to your feet, we wipe off against you.' Yet be sure of this, the kingdom of God is near. I tell you, it will be more bearable on that day for Sodom than it was for that town. Let's move on to verse 16. He who listens to you, listens to me. He who rejects you, rejects me. But he who rejects me, rejects him who sent me. And the 72 returned with joy and said, Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name. And he replied, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I have given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. And at that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you've hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this was your good pleasure.
Amen.
I think nobody ever said it was going to be easy to go into this world. I don't find it easy. I'm sure you don't. But if you read that passage, you'll find it's a place of joy as well. And it's a place where we end up with a testimony. Each week at our church, or usually most weeks, we have what we call 60-second testimonies. We call it 60 seconds so people don't go on too long. We don't time them. It's all right. But it's interesting because the people who come forward are usually people who are engaging with their world. And the stories they tell are of people they've met that week or things that have happened to them that week, usually with people who are outside the church, outside of the faith. And actually, not only builds us up as a church, really encourages us to know that people are having that interaction, but they're feeling excited and enthused about their faith and feeling alive because of God using them in that situation. Just like these 72, wow, we're coming back with a real sense of enthusiasm. We've been sent out and we've seen God at work. Let's start at the beginning. The first two words of that chapter 10 say, after this. Well, after what? Well, after that, something had gone a bit wrong. Chapter 9, verse 51, Jesus is setting out to Jerusalem resolutely, face like a flint. He knows that his end is near. And I think, well, this is only halfway through the gospel. Jesus is already setting his face towards Jerusalem. And he sent messengers ahead of him to go to a village to prepare for them to stay there. It was a Samaritan village, and let's be honest, it didn't go well. They said, if he's going to Jerusalem to worship God there, we don't worship in Jerusalem, he's not welcome here. Now James and John did whatever many good Christians would do and said, shall we firebomb the place, basically. We'll call down fire from heaven on them. They've rejected you, Jesus, let's just destroy them. Jesus wasn't very happy with their response to the community, and he rebuked them. But his answer was, let's move on to where we are welcome, verse 55. Then we have Jesus encountering these people on the road. We haven't got time to go into this, but it's interesting. There are people who say, well, I want to follow you, but I've got other things I need to do. I've got other things that crowd into my life, other things that are important to me. And it's a very challenging little passage that is often preached on. What does it cost to follow Jesus? And Jesus actually doesn't show a great deal of, you think, compassion to the issues they were dealing with. He says, well, if you're going to follow me, don't mess around. Just do it. Don't mess around. And then we come to chapter 10. We've had this Samaritan village incident. So after this, he decides to send out 72 others. Some translations have 70. It's a very specific number, a bit like the 12. It wasn't a random number of who's in the room, let's choose them. Like the 12 disciples with the 12 tribes had significance to the Jews. 70 had a very big significance too. 70 was the nations of the world as far as they were concerned. It was the world. So Jesus actually, in a very symbolic way, is saying, I'm sending you into the world. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. His last last words, weren't they, in Matthew's gospel. So we've got this idea of Jesus sending out 72 to say, well, this message is for everyone. But there were others. All we read about them is there were 72 others. They weren't the close gang of 12. They weren't the professionals. They weren't the regulars. We don't know who they were. Nobody's name is mentioned. There's probably men and women there because a band of women travelled with Jesus too. They're anonymous. They're nobodies. We know nothing else about them apart from they had this extraordinary experience. They were just like you and me. They were ordinary Joes. right? Jesus sent them. He appointed them to go. That's, he said, he gave them a job to do, basically, let's say today. And then he sent them out. He's three times in the verse, first three verses of chapter 10, we have that word sent. He said it wouldn't be easy. And do you know what? It still isn't, is it? If it was easy, we'd be doing it. The church in Britain would be doing it all the time. If it was that easy to go into our communities and share the love of Jesus, share the gospel of Jesus, well, you know, the church would be in a lot different position when it comes to mission. And he says, there's three little words that are used, that Jesus uses here, which basically play to the heart of us. He says, first of all, how encouraging this would be to ordinary people, the others. I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. I mean, that's petrifying. I come from a farming country in North Yorkshire, sheep farms. And sheep worrying, as they call it, when a dog is let loose among a flock, is a big issue. And farmers, I'm afraid, don't worry about what people think about dogs, and I love dogs. They get their shotgun out and they shoot a dog that is found worrying the sheep. The dog thinks it's having fun. It's just wandering, you know, running around chasing them. But what happens is the sheep get petrified by a dog, you know. It could even be your little Labrador who wouldn't hurt a whatever. They're frightened sick. And if they're actually pregnant with lambs, they tend to lose the lambs, they miscarry. Some of them are killed because they just die of fright. That's a little dog. I'm sending you, says Jesus, cheer up, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. That's an even more scary thing. Not like sheep among a dog, but lambs among wolves. It's interesting, you know, actually he's saying, this is going to be a bit scary. I think Jesus is saying to them, this is not going to be easy for you. He also referred to them at the end of this passage we read, verse 21, as little children. These others were like little children in his eyes. They didn't know a lot. They didn't have much experience. They were quite vulnerable themselves. But yet they were still sent out with God's power and strength to get on and do God's work. And they saw these extraordinary things happen to them. The third thing he says, you're like workers, but you're like a few workers in a big harvest field. How often do we feel like there's not enough of us to make a difference? There's too few people. But I'm sending you not only as lambs among wolves, like little children, I'm sending you like a few workers in a great big harvest field. This seems overwhelming too. Not only frightening, not only outside of our experience, but also extremely overwhelming in terms of there's too much for us to do for the few of us that are here. He sends them out as workers, remember, not as evangelists. And he sends them out as workers who need more help. He says, you know, ask for more helpers. Ask that there'll be more helpers come to join you. Because there's not enough to do the job, but I'm still sending you. We often say, well, there's too few of us to make a difference. There's too, you know, we can't do it. We don't know anything. We're just ordinary people. It's frightening out there. We're like lambs among wolves. It's a scary place to go. We've got no experience of this. We're like little children. There's not enough of us. And the result is, like so many churches, I'm not talking about this church, but in general, inertia creeps in, that paralysis creeps in that fear brings, that sense of being overwhelmed. I've known challenges with mental health at times. I'll tell you, fear, being overwhelmed, and a sense of feeling it's beyond me, are three reasons that completely paralyse you from doing anything. You just feel unable to cope. And yet Jesus still says three times, I send you. I send you. I send you. Now, harvest is hard work. I, again, worked on a farm in my younger days. And during harvest, everything else takes second place, you know? It's the priority. And actually, you know, when we used to work in those days, even with machinery today, the kids worked, you know, The mums worked, the dads worked, you know, you all worked. I was up at my old church, Hollybush, which is still on a farm, the other day, and there I was, a 93-year-old Jim Wilkinson was out in his fields, took me down, he can hardly see to drive these days, asked me to count up how many bales were in a field, the bales fall over, there I am, I'm supposed to be speaking at night, and I'm shifting bales, you know? And then I'm taking drinks out to the people who are stacking the bales. Didn't think I was going to do any of that, but it was harvest. You've got to get on and do it. You know, there's always something to do at harvest. And that little bit, making a drink, as Jim also did, you know, checking how many bales were left, all those kind of things. There's a little job for everyone. Harvest doesn't wait until we're ready. Till we're prepared. You know, we don't determine when harvest happens. When harvest happens, we either get it in or we lose it. It's as simple as that. That's what happens on farms, you know. You either get it in when it's ready or you lose it. You don't choose, well, actually, I can fit it in, you know, that weekend on a whatever. I can do some harvesting then. Well, the weather, the speed the crop grows at, whatever. Those are the things that determine a harvest, not our diaries, you know. But finally, and this is kind of also important, when he sent them out, although there were few, they were told not to go alone. He sent them out two by two, as we read, you know. This isn't just a job for the pastor. It's not just a job here for Brian. We all need support in this work. It's not a solo mission. Harvest means all hands on deck. That's us then, the few. The little children, inexperienced. The vulnerable, like lambs among whatever, but with a big job to do that seemed beyond us. You're sent. You're appointed. You better get on with it. The next thing is resources. And we might say, well, we can't go because we don't have enough resources. As well as there being too few of us, we've got nothing to offer. We haven't got enough money. We haven't got enough, you know, this, that and the other. And excuses often made in churches. Well, you know, we haven't got the resources to really get involved in mission. We're not prepared. We haven't got the backup. But this is the most strange thing about this. And it brings you back to the Cliff Trekkers. Do you remember Cliff College and the Trekkers? My mum became a Christian through Cliff Trekkers in our village, miles away up in North Yorkshire. But they were sent out with nothing. Every summer. My wife was a herald in the AOG church, the Assembly of God church. And for that year, as an 18-year-old girl, she wasn't given any money, but she was expected to believe God for her train fares, to get to the next place of mission, to go to stay with whoever she was put up with, to do whatever was required. She lived by faith for a year. It was a challenging thing for her. I actually, when I left school after my A-levels, I went to work on a farm who was at Hollybush, but not Jim Wilkinson, next door in North Yorkshire. And for a year I worked for no wages, and I just was trusting God for, you know, everything to come in. So and actually I told the farm, whatever you get, sorry, this sounds like I'm bigging myself up, give to the church. I wanted to live by faith for a year myself. It's not easy. It's much easier to do as a single young person, I have to add, than it is when you're married, you've got a mortgage and everything. So let's just part that. I'm not saying this is the way that church should always be, but Jesus sends out 72 others, not the professionals, remember, with no money, no bag, no sandals. Now, I don't know what that means. If that means extra sandals, I'm assuming. Assuming they didn't go out barefoot, you know. But they were set to take no resources of their own. To be vulnerable. To be like those lambs. To be, you know, actually in need of help from the people around them, because they didn't have enough to make it work themselves. I mean, so much evangelism that we do these days in the West, in the UK, we go with the answer, don't we? We go with the resources to throw up the problem, you know, we've got the money to set up the projects or whatever it is. Everything has to be put in place, and then we do it for the community or for the people we're going to. But this isn't how Jesus sent out these 72. Now, I'm not suggesting we always do it like this. But Jesus seemed to suggest here that going to people when we hold all the cards, all the power, all the control, is not necessarily always the right way to do it. That we don't just go with our own strength and our own abilities, but we have to rely on God and actually on the people around us. I read a really interesting story about 2 or 3 years ago about a church in the USA who took this very seriously in an urban setting, in a poor area. They decided as a group of people to go and move into this area to plant a church. But they went with no money, no resources. They knocked on a few doors and said, "We've got a vision to plant a church in your area, but we're going to need your help in the community to make this happen. We're going to need you helping us to resource it, to make it happen." They went in need of that community. And actually they planted a church on the back of that, rather than on the back of what they needed. And Jesus told them instead in verses 5 to 9, almost to make connections in the community that they were being sent into, to build relationships, to stay with people, to stick with those who you're building friendships with, to where hospitality was given, to take it. If they were offering to give you food, to take it. A cup of tea, drink, take it. To allow people to serve us. Very different from what we normally have. Oh, is that getting unequally you up though, Jonathan? No. It's a completely different thing. This is about building relationships and partnerships with the people that we're being sent to. I said regularly at our church when I was leading it, if somebody says to you in the church, whatever you were doing, the different groups were doing, and they're not part of the church, can I help? Can I do this? Can I wash up? Can I make the drinks? Can I stack the chairs? The initial reaction of Christians is, oh, no, we'll do that for you. You know, you just sit there, we'll do it all. That is the wrong mistake. The answer was always from me, yes. Get involved. Do something. And to be honest, I've seen people who've been hurt by this, because having encouraged them to do it, they've come across a Christian and who has found that they haven't done it right. You know, they haven't washed up correctly. My help, we need some help, don't we? Or they haven't put the pots where they should be. Or they haven't done it as I would do it. We have to learn to allow things to be done differently. We have to learn to allow people to contribute and to be part. You know, we can't just have this separation between us and the community. We've got to encourage them to be part of what we're doing. He did send them out door knocking, which is quite a relief for me, because I used to hate having to do that when I worked for a church in Manchester. They sent me out door knocking. And it's really quite disheartening at times, you know, you knock on a door. And I remember going to one door, true story this, and I said, "Don't worry, I'm not a Jehovah's Witness." And the person behind the door said, "I am," and slammed the door in my face. I suppose they'd had enough of it in their own life to know what it was like. But, you know, it can be disheartening. But he didn't send them door knocking. He says, don't move around from house to house, in fact. He says, build on the relationships that you've got in that community, verse 7. He didn't ask them to give out tracts even. He asked them to build peaceful, dare I say, relationships. I heard somebody say many years ago, if we treat non-Christians or people of other faiths as the enemy, that's what they'll become. We've got to learn to treat people well, you know. And the 72 were asked, if you like, to go into an area and discover open doors, open hearts, open homes, and stay with those who opened their lives to them, and to bring peace and healing to those situations. Do you know, to be good news, if you like, good news people, healing the sick. And I think these days that's not just physically healing people, emotionally, you know, mentally. There are so many people who are stressed and anxious, who need God's peace, who needs God's hope, who need wholeness in their lives. We're often seen as such bad news, aren't we? Well, we should be good news in our community. We had somebody called a parish nurse, proper nurse, but worked alongside the church, offering advice. And every time, Kate did this for a few years in our church, just finished, she said, at the end, I always was able to offer prayer, which is something she couldn't do in the National Health Service. And she had people of no faith, of different faiths, as well as Christians coming to visit her. And she said, it was very rarely when I said, can I pray for you about this situation, that anyone said no. And I have to say, when I've walked around the streets on the estate and somebody's told me their story, they just open up people sometimes when you just chat to them, you know, and you tell them who you are and what you're doing, you ask them how they are. Just very open questions. You don't start with, by the way, I'm a Christian and you're going to hell. You know, you start with, how are you and what's the weather like and all that. But, well, I'm from a church, you know. And you find at the end of that, when you say, can I pray for you here now? I have found, honestly, that the vast majority of people say, yes, please. It's a shock to our system sometimes. We always think people are going to be negative. But out there are people of peace. Out there in this community, there are still homes and people who will welcome us. There are still people who might want to come in here and help make a meal, you know, for an event, or help make some drinks, or get involved in those kind of ways with the great things that are now happening in this church midweek. There are people who will do that. We've just got to find them. That's good news. But there's another reality that we've all got to come to terms with, and I struggle with, and I expect we all do, and it's the reason why we often don't do it, is that we should also expect opposition. Verses 10 to 16 makes it clear. We will never be universally welcomed as the church. If we are, we've got something terribly wrong. And we often stop before we even start because of this. We say to ourselves, well, you know, well, people aren't going to like us if we share the gospel. The gospel will always provoke opposition. It should do. That's what Paul taught us in the New Testament. It will be a stumbling block. It will be an offence. It will cause people to make a decision one way or the other. And you're in the wrong club if you want everyone to like everything that you do as a Christian, or everything that you believe as a Christian. The problem, the result is that we will be rejected by some people. And I, you know, again, to be honest, rejection is an emotion I've battled with all my life because of things that have happened to me in my history. I don't need to go into it. I've had prayer for it. I've had lots of other things. But I do struggle with rejection. Sometimes I successfully get over it, sometimes not so much. We all really, at our heart, because we're human beings and are social beings, we want to be liked. We want to be loved. We want to be accepted. But really, we do need to recognise that unless we've been obnoxious, their problem is with God. Their problem is with the gospel. Their problem is not with us, ourselves. And really, this is not our fight. Jesus is saying to them, look, you might think they're rejecting you, but behind this, they're really rejecting my message. They're rejecting my Father. They're rejecting the gospel. It's not our judgment call. We don't have to start chucking down fire from heaven like James and John wanted to do. It's God's. But we also don't have to waste our time on people who don't want to know. As somebody said, there's plenty more fish in the sea, and we're called to be fishers of men, of course. Finally, you know, and I start here, let's not miss out. So many Christians do, because they do feel a sense of being overwhelmed by the task. Or they do feel frightened about the possibility of being a lamb among wolves. Or they do feel we're too few to make a difference when we've got so much to do. We do feel too inexperienced because we're just like a little kid in this. You know, we don't really know what we're doing. But the church needs to get out more. And this church is getting out more, which is wonderful. You might just feel another, just one of the others in the church today. But actually, God wants to appoint and send you too. It's not just for the professionals. It's certainly not just for the pastor. We all need to be involved. However vulnerable we feel, however inexperienced we feel, however we feel we've got nothing to give, no resources to throw at this, well, Jesus sends us out with nothing. These are the exact type of people who Jesus appoints in Luke 10. So let's come to the hard truth. And this is the reality. In a world where we have preached revival and God's promise of a church growing, and please God, I still hold on to that. You know, I still hold on to God. God's kingdom, you know, growing and coming. And around the world, there are remarkable things happening in countries like Iran, particularly at the moment. I've just heard some remarkable things happening in Iran. Despite all you hear on the news about the attitude towards women and stuff that's happening there, the church is growing rapidly in a fantastic way. But here in the UK, many churches are currently dying out. I'm talking about evangelical churches. You can point the finger at other churches. I'm talking about evangelical Pentecostal churches. And the latest Evangelical Alliance survey, which is the umbrella organisation of the UK, it was on about talking about Jesus to people. Inviting people, if you like. And these are the staggering figures that came out. Just over 50% of evangelical Christians in the UK don't know any non-Christians that they feel they can share the gospel with. That already kicks out 50% of all Christians doing any work, if you like, in terms of mission. Wow, think about that. 50% say, well, I don't have anyone I can talk to about Jesus. Don't know anyone. Another staggering figure is just over 50% of non-Christians, just over 50% of non-Christians in the UK say they know an active Christian. Well, that's quite staggering as well, because not that they're friends with them, but they know an active Christian. Only 50%. And the really staggering thing is in the last 10 years, that figure has dropped from 68%. That's a massive drop in a short period of time. So the non-Christians don't know any of us, and we don't know any of them. And then we wonder why the church isn't full. And it's because, if we go back to the great banquet, that we're waiting for the gatecrasher to come in. You know, like the man who came in, who Jesus healed, you know, who wasn't supposed to be there at that meal with the Pharisees anyway. And for years, the church has dined out, dare we say, on the occasional visitor coming in who we didn't expect, who wasn't invited, who we knew nothing about, who we then, oh gosh, goodness me, what are we going to do with them, you know, kind of thing, happens. Instead of doing what Jesus said in that parable of the great banquet, of going, or here how he said 72, normal, everyday people out. But in going out, an image to our neighbours, to our friends. Don't have to be, you know, some massive great march down Darnley Street or knocking on every door. But just within the social fabric of people that we meet every day. Just think about how those guys came back. They'd seen God at work. They'd seen God at work powerfully. They'd seen demons submit to his name. They'd seen things happen that they would have never, ever seen if they'd never gone. Do you want a testimony? Well, we have to start getting out a bit. You see, outreach is really, the mission of Christ is far less about gimmicks, special events and speakers. It's, you know, the church now is so desperate, we're using any means, including diluting, shall we say, some of our ideas and our values. Anything we can do to make ourselves acceptable to the world outside, you know, so you can come in and join us. Anything but going and being and befriending and bringing and convincing and cajoling and telling people you'd be welcome. And the interesting thing about this whole story, of course, is it wasn't take them to the synagogue on a Saturday. Doesn't come into this thing. It's a 7-day a week thing. You're going into these homes. You're spending time with people. It's stuff that's happening outside of the synagogue. It's happening outside of the services. It's happening outside of the church, we would say today. It's always about us sharing our lives, sharing our faith, offering to pray with people, being people of peace, being people who bring the healing of God and the grace of God into situations, being vulnerable, going beyond the fear, and sharing the love of God with those around us. God bless you. Thank you.